Hey everyone, this is Achyut Bhava from Nightlight Astrology, and today we're going to take another look at Venus's square with Neptune, which is perfecting today. We took a look at Venus Neptune yesterday, took a look at a dream that I had. It was really interesting to share some of the, it was almost like a Venus Neptune dream. And then we also took a look at an essay from James Hillman and an I Ching reading. So it was a really good way of starting to unpack that. A little bit more nuts and bolts today with Venus and Neptune, but give you help to round out your understanding of this transit this week. Venus is also getting into a sextile with Jupiter as the week goes on. Towards the end of the week, the Sun is also going to move into a square with Saturn. And so by the end of the week, we're going to be talking about Sun-Saturn dynamics. So, and then we'll be, by the next week, we'll be unpacking the astrology of November already. It's hard to believe it's passing. In November and December, really big astrology. We're getting into eclipse season. We've got a huge Venus retrograde in December. Saturn and Uranus are getting back together. So it's just very, very dynamic energy coming through. All right. Well, in the meantime, today, before I get into that, I want to remind all of you that my new class, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic, is starting in less than 3 weeks. We are just about to get the class started. This is the 23rd group that I've brought through this program over the past 10, 11 years. The program's changed quite a bit over the years, but Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic is a course in Hellenistic astrology. It gives you an understanding of the esoteric, spiritual, historical roots of horoscopic astrology. And it is really the study of fate. And you could say that it is a highly predictive kind of astrology, insofar as we're learning how to predict and understand karma, fate, destiny, and the times at which different things in the birth chart will manifest and appear in the course of life. And what we're doing over the course of this program is we're also marrying that to the study of character, behavior, and psychology from a sort of what we might call an archetypal or psychological approach to the birth chart. So there's kind of a fusion as the course goes on. At the end of the program, we're inviting live clients in, and you're seeing me combine both predictive and psychological elements in a reading. It is a fantastic program. This is, I poured myself into this program more than any other creative project in my life. So it's, you know, over 100 hours worth of classroom content. You've got 30 classes, 2 to 3 hours each. You can attend them live or download the recordings afterward if you can't make it live to the webinars. There's interactive forum discussions. You can email me year-round with questions. We have a staff of tutors. We have breakout study sessions where you can get tutoring if you need it in between major units. We've got guest speakers, tons of bonus material. It's a great program. And I'm really excited to have a whole new group of people coming through it. The early bird payment is only available for a couple more weeks, so make sure you take advantage of that. You can save $500 off. There is a payment plan at the full price of tuition if you need it. And also, we do have need-based tuition for people who might be you know, hurting or whatever challenge or struggle you may have, or restraint, restriction. Financially, we always have an option for people so that people aren't priced out of a spiritual learning program. At any rate, thank you guys, by the way, for letting me promote this. I don't have any form of marketing or advertising other than just sharing with people who consume my content what I'm doing and how you can get involved. So I really appreciate that. Now, here's the real-time clock. And what we are doing is we're tracking Venus in Sagittarius moving through a square with Neptune today, October 26th. As the week goes on, Venus is also going to hit a sextile to Jupiter. And that sextile will happen, you can see it coming through, by Thursday, October 28th. So between now and Thursday, October 28th, you have a really benefic planetary aspects coming through. You also have Mars about to change signs and pick up dignity into Scorpio. So there's kind of a positive shift of momentum happening this week, which we might feel very good about considering all of the intense Plutonian energy that was coming through last week. Now, we do at the end of this week, we're going to see the Sun hit a square to Saturn. We're going to see also Mercury moving through a square with Pluto. So we will have some aspects to be unpacking. November eclipse season starts. So there's a lot of intense transformative astrology ahead. I always think of transformative astrology as neither here nor there in terms of like whether you'll enjoy it. I tend to really enjoy transformative periods of time, even if there's certain aspects that are really difficult, because I love that feeling that I'm growing and things are changing and evolving. But also we have to try not to ride the roller coaster, right? So we, you know, we're studying these things not to keep the feeling of drama amplified in our lives all the time, but to prepare ourselves. And frankly, it's nice when we have a week like this one, because this week there's aspects in the air that a lot of people will experience as very uplifting, supportive, kind of easier, generally speaking. They don't always last very long, so it's good to understand them and try to tap into them while they're here. All right, so anyway, that's the real time clock. So nuts and bolts, Venus, Neptune. I'm going to read for you guys at the end today a section of the Bhagavad Gita, and that gets into what I think is the simplest way of describing Venus Neptune. Venus Neptune creates a feeling of the all-pervading beauty. The all-pervading beauty is not the same as, you know, the beauty of someone with a nice body or someone who is photogenic or something like that. It's not the beauty of you know, romance and falling in love. It's not the beauty of a sunset, right? It's a beauty that captures all of those things into one. And it's so sublime and pervasive. It feels like this beauty is at the core of everything, permeates the entire universe. So you get this kind of transcendental, subtle, timeless, imaginative, infinite quality with Neptune involved, with Neptune in the mix of the Venus. So Venus square Neptune creates this feeling. And the way that I see this influence people's lives, in there's two basic ways, and it's pretty much common for all Neptune aspects. There is a wonderful book that was written by Liz Green on Neptune called Neptune, and I want to say The Astrological Quest for Redemption or something like that. Actually, I'll look it up while I'm talking about it. But this book, one of the things that she talks about in this book is here it is. The Astrological Neptune and the Quest for Redemption. So if you guys want to read this book, by the way, one of my favorite books written on Neptune, here it is. I'll just post it up on the screen for you. Astrological Neptune and the Quest for Redemption. You can get it hardcover, paperback, or Kindle. It looks like on Amazon, if you want to support Amazon, that's up to you. So at any rate, the feeling that Neptune gives us when it hits anything, but especially Venus, is the need for some kind of all-powerful, all-redeeming salvation and beauty. So this is some kind of a beauty that saves, a romance that saves, a friendship that redeems, a transcendental romantic energy that makes all things whole and good and peaceful again. There's that song, and I'm trying to remember if the song was just called Woodstock. I think it was originally by Joni Mitchell, and then I think Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young ended up playing it at Woodstock because she couldn't be there or something. Maybe I'm messing the story up. But you guys know the lyrics of the song? I mean, I'll look them up because it's so perfect. I'm looking all sorts of stuff up today. Yeah, it's Joni Mitchell. So this is so, like, there couldn't be an aspect in some ways more indicative of something like Woodstock than Neptune Venus, right? I came upon a child of God. He was walking along the road, and I asked him, "Where are you going?" And this he told me: "I'm going on down to Yasgur's farm. I'm going to join in a rock and roll band. I'm going to camp out on the land. I'm going to try and get my soul free." And then, of course, the famous refrain: "We are stardust, we are golden, and we've got to get ourselves back to the garden." So, and I like another verse that I really like: "By the time we got to Woodstock, we were 500,000 strong, and everywhere there was song and celebration. And I dreamed I saw the bombers riding shotgun in the sky, and they were turning into butterflies above our nation. We are stardust, billion-year-old carbon. We are golden, caught in the devil's bargain, and we've got to get ourselves back to the garden." This captures to me the essence of Venus Neptune. Venus Neptune is very Edenic. There's a feeling that this sex is taking me to God. This person that I'm falling in love with is taking me home. This art exhibit is from another planet. You know, it has that feeling. Or if you've ever had an LSD trip, or if you've ever had a psychedelic experience, that feeling that you're walking through Eden. I compare it sometimes to, I remember one time, you know, someone was asking me, what is ayahuasca like? And I was talking about, I was in the Amazon the very first time that I drank. And I remember one of the most profound things was when I was in a more blissful state of consciousness during the my very first ceremony, because there were some really horrific parts of that ceremony too, but there were blissful parts as well. And in this particularly blissful state, I was hearing everything in the jungle. And I remember it was so beautiful. It was like, it was terrible because there were things definitely like eating each other, and there was all sorts of gnarly sounds, but it was also this overall pervasive feeling of like, I'm in the Garden of Eden. Oh my God. You know, like, and it was can't even put words to it. It's like in the movie Contact, I've said this before too. And when she's seeing, going to, through this wormhole and seeing these heavenly beauties, and she says they should have sent a poet. And that's kind of what it felt like. But a friend was asking me, what was it like? And I said, it's like the movie Avatar, when it's like these translucent, beautiful Edenic plants and flowers and all sorts of things. So Venus Neptune is like that, in the sense that it inspires within us the need or the desire to live and inhabit that kind of reality. And there's a feeling with Venus Neptune that it's here, it's right around the corner. You just can't see it, or either that, or you somehow got disconnected from it, and you've got to get yourself back to the garden. You've got to get back to Eden. And one of the most common things that I see in my clients over the years, 10, 11 years, 11 years now of, 11 going on 12. So that one of the things that I've seen is when someone has a Neptune transit to their natal Venus, that they will go through a period of feeling the acute sense of disconnection from that Edenic like place, the feeling that it's here, that it's near, that it's close at hand, starts to pervade their life, their mind, their consciousness. And then usually like a little temptation fruit appears. And the fruit is not, it's not that this doesn't exist. It's not that this ideal kind of utopian place doesn't exist, or that a state of consciousness or connection doesn't exist, or that the imagination isn't capable of living life with some kind of bliss or beauty or something like that. It's that people make the mistake of thinking, this person, I'm going to have an affair with this person, or this person I'm falling in love with is going to solve all my problems, or this job, or this whatever. People get enamored by one particular idea that they believe it's this thing that will bring me into the garden. And they get really obsessed with it, enamored by it, and deluded by it. And then oftentimes what happens is they'll go through an experience where they realize this thing is not my salvation. But by going through the process, they also realize I need more imagination in my life, or I need more of, I need that Holy Spirit religiously or spiritually, or I need the muse artistically, or whatever it may be. There's a feeling that, okay, it wasn't this person, or it wasn't this new job, or, it wasn't a facelift, or whatever it is. That was nice. It was fun, but it was also, transient. It was fleeting. And so it doesn't stay long. So the person realizes that. And then they say, there's some way that I need to be living my life, some more basic mode of living, an imaginative mode, a soulful mode, or even for some people, it's going to be spiritual. It's going to be an imaginative religious participation mystique. And the feeling is, okay, it wasn't this thing, but I now realize that I can't make the mistake of thinking that it's a thing or a person and try to objectify it. It's something that has to come through me. Sometimes then people's lives start to yield more to the spirit of Venus Neptune. And that's the kind of transformation I generally watch people go through with this transit psychologically. On the other hand, the almost sort of second most common thing that I see is that people who have been attached to something or someone as their salvation in an almost codependent manner will come to realize that this state of happiness or this inherent feeling of connection is not really about that person or that thing. So they'll go through a period of disillusionment. Okay, so something that's already there, not something that you go and pursue, but something that's already there that you thought was your salvation is, it's nice. It's not that you need to condemn it or dismiss it or, chuck it out the window or something like that. But you kind of go, yeah, I'm actually okay. The state of joy, happiness, connection, bliss, beauty that I'm really looking for is within me. Or it's found in many different things, not just this one thing. So sometimes people will go through periods of recognizing the degree to which they have tried to concretize their salvation in a thing or something like that. I've seen many people, for example, who become far less codependent during such a time. And sometimes that leads to the dissolution of relationships. Other times it just leads to a person taking the pressure off from themselves or their partner and being like, well, you don't need to be all that I have or all that makes me happy. So I've noticed those kinds of things with Neptune. But overall, one of the things that's so beautiful about Venus-Neptune is that feeling that there is an all-pervasive, divine, mystical state of union, beauty, connection, romance, friendship, fraternity, and sorority. That there's that the cosmos, like we said yesterday from the word cosmetic, is a well-placed, well-arranged whole presenting itself to me, mind, body, spirit, and I can appreciate it. I can step into it somehow and feel the bliss of it. These transits, that's why I love the Venus-Neptune transit, because ultimately, even though you might go through a little bit of the, you know, people can actually get really extreme. People can get dogmatic about what they, you know, let's be clear. Woodstock, although I'm, you know, in many ways just celebrating those lyrics because I think I love that song. But, you know, Woodstock in the 60s and the drug state was also filled with a ton of idealism and, you know, you sort of youthful idealism, utopianism, this kind of thing. You know, it often is underneath it is an attempt to try to concretize or hold or grasp or possess Venus-Neptune in a sense, or that transcendental beauty. And the secret to experiencing it is to letting it flow, then letting it flow through things that appear to be derivations, that appear to be ugly, that appear to be unjust, and to try to keep in the spirit of appreciation and to keep appreciating the presentations of life. That's really hard to do because we can get fixated on the particular forms that we appreciate and that we like and don't like and so forth. And so, you know, Venus-Neptune can be associated with people who are, you know, ideologues, people who are ideologically rigid in their sense of what is beautiful or perfect. Perfectionists can infiltrate any political party, they can infiltrate any religious group, they can infiltrate any art school, they can infiltrate any kind of culture that has a sense of its high taste or its high preferences. It can infiltrate and create a sense of superiority and so forth. And one of the things that can help us with Venus-Neptune is a good time to evaluate, you know, what are my values? Where is it that I'm a perfectionist? Where do I have very high standards that are maybe, you know, I can even be dogmatic about? Where can I start to see with greater equality of vision, the beauty of life? You know, is it in my job? For example, I want things to only go one way. That's what I prefer. That's what I like. That's what I think is tasteful or beautiful. But there's things going, you know, they're going in a way that I don't like. I don't like the way things are happening in my workplace right now. Okay, well, this is a great week to develop the appreciating capacity for what's presenting itself. Imagine that in your workplace, whatever's happening that you find ugly or distasteful in some way, or, you know, whatever it might be, try to stand back and have an appreciating capacity. An appreciating capacity is not a condoning capacity. It's not that you condone bad behavior. It's not that you pretend that something's good or fluffy and unicorny when it's not. An appreciating capacity is like the ability to stand back and look at, you know, dark, melancholic artwork or something at a museum and to be able to appreciate that dimension of humanity or existence itself. So appreciating something means we learn to see the value in it. And with Venus-Neptune, sometimes we have to see the value in it from the standpoint of timelessness and eternity, which is, you know, it's a big ask. We live in a time-bound world where, you know, we definitely have preferences, we have likes and dislikes, and it's impossible to not participate in the dualities of everyday life. Venus-Neptune, though, can say, hey, look, if you want to get over something that's feeling like it's really disappointing you, it's really not living up to your standard or your measure of success, stand back and see if you can appreciate a different kind of beauty. When you do that, it's not that, you know, it shifts something internally in us. It allows us to see situation from a different perspective. And often that's the key to starting to solve a problem or to create a change. That just that shift in perspective, that appreciating capacity is oftentimes it goes from something is imperfect to everything is completely perfect. And then it's not that we stay stuck there and, well, everything's completely perfect. Nothing's wrong. I'm denying troubles. I'm denying pain. It's that having that big perspective of beauty shifts our consciousness. And then suddenly we start to see a way around problems, solutions, compromises, reconciliation, because it's that perspective that allows us to see right relationships between parts. Between, you know, it starts to help us see harmony between things that we couldn't see before. That perspective then shifts us in how we can move through life, and especially in the places where we feel intolerant of what we perceive to be imperfections. Okay, rant over. I want to read to you guys a section from the Bhagavad Gita to close today. This is chapter 10, which is called the opulence of the absolute. And I'm just going to read, the whole chapter to you guys today. It is so beautiful. And this has to do with the Bhagavad Gita. It's called the Song of God. It appears in a portion of the Mahabharata, which is a great Indian epic. It's like the Odyssey or the Iliad in India, sort of. And there's a section called the Song of God where Arjuna, who's a warrior, is receiving instructions from God in the form of Krishna on the battlefield about what to do with this terrible situation that he finds himself in. And he's wondering, you know, how do I live a spiritual life given this terrible moral and ethical dilemma that I'm in that is less than perfect? It is less than ideal. And so he's giving him all these insights. And then as he goes on, Krishna starts to reveal to him the nature of God. And in the nature of God, it's helping Arjuna to step out of the temporary feeling of being in this terrible moral position where things are very much less than ideal. It's not agape, right? It's a civil war. And he's helping him reconfigure his understanding of reality, divinity, and hence the problem that he's facing, which appears to be this very blemished, you know, this kind of blemished situation. Okay. So chapter 10, the opulence of the absolute. The Supreme Lord said, "My dear mighty armed Arjuna, listen again to my supreme word, which I shall impart to you for your benefit and which will give you great joy. Neither the hosts of demigods nor the great sages know my origin, for in every respect, I am the source of the demigods and the sages. He who knows me as the unborn, as the beginningless, as the supreme Lord of all the worlds, he undiluted among men is free from all sins. Intelligence, knowledge, freedom from doubt and delusion, forgiveness, truthfulness, self-control and calmness, pleasure and pain, birth, death, fear, fearlessness, nonviolence, equanimity, satisfaction, austerity, charity, fame and infamy are created by me alone. The seven great sages and before them, the four other great sages and Manus are born out of my mind, and all creatures in these planets descend from them. He who knows in truth this glory and power of mine engages in unalloyed devotional service. Of this there is no doubt. I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who know this perfectly engage in my devotional service and worship me with all of their hearts. The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Their lives are surrendered to me, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss enlightening one another and conversing about me. To those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. Out of compassion for them, I, dwelling in their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance." Here you can hear Krishna talking to Arjuna about this appreciate. If you learn to see me in all things, and connect to me through an appreciating capacity in the heart in all things, then I start to give you the knowledge that you need to move through life in the right way. Arjuna said, "You are the supreme Brahman, the ultimate, the supreme abode and purifier, the absolute truth and eternal divine person. You are the primal God, transcendental and original. You are the unborn and all-pervading beauty. All the great sages such as Narada, Asita, Devala, and Vyas proclaim this of you, and now you yourself are declaring it to me. O Krishna, I totally accept as truth all that you have told me. Neither the gods nor demons, O Lord, know thy personality. Indeed, you alone know yourself by your own potencies, O origin of all, Lord of all beings, God of gods, supreme person, Lord of the universe. Please tell me in detail of your divine powers by which you pervade all these worlds and abide in them. How should I meditate on you? In what various forms are you to be contemplated, O blessed Lord? Tell me again in detail, O Janardhan, of your mighty potencies and glories, for I never tire of hearing your ambrosial words. So here's Arjuna starting to recognize, like, that this is Krishna talking about the divine source of all things. And Arjuna's starting to understand it, and he's saying, okay, but tell me more. Give me a sense of how you work through all of the variegated forces of reality. The blessed Lord said, yes, I will tell you of my splendorous manifestations, but only of those which are prominent, O Arjuna, for my opulence is limitless. I am the self, O Gudakesha, seated in the hearts of all creatures. I am the beginning, the middle, and the end of all beings. Of the Adityas, I am Vishnu. Of lights, I am the radiant sun. I am Marichi of the Maruts, and among the stars, I am the moon. Of the Vedas, I am the Sama Veda. The demigods, I am Indra. Of the senses, I am the mind, and in living beings, I am the living force, knowledge. Of all the Rudras, I am Lord Shiva. Of the Yakshas and Rakshasas, I am the Lord of Wealth, Kubera. The Vasus, I am Fire, Agni, and of the mountains, I am Meru. Of priests, O Arjuna, know me to be the chief, Brushpati, the Lord of Devotion. Of generals, I am Skanda, the Lord of War, and of bodies of water, I am the ocean. Of the great sages, I am Bhrigu. Of vibrations, I am the transcendental Om. Of sacrifices, I am the chanting of the holy names, Japa, and of immovable things, I am the Himalayas. Of all trees, I am the holy fig tree, and among sages and demigods, I am Narada. Of the singers of the gods, Gandharvas, I am Chittaratha, and among perfected beings, I am the sage, Kapila. Of horses, know me to be Uchashrava, who rose out of the ocean, born of the elixir of immortality. Of lordly elephants, I am Aravata, and among men, I am the monarch. Of weapons, I am the thunderbolt. Among cows, I am the Surabhi, givers of abundant milk. Of procreators, I am Kandarpa, the god of love. And of serpents, I am Vasuki, the chief. Of the celestial Naga snakes, I am Ananta. Of the aquatic deities, I am Varuna. Of departed ancestors, I am Aryama. And among the dispensers of law, I am Yama, lord of death. Among the Daitya demons, I am the devoted Prahlad. Among subduers, I am Time. Among the beasts, I am the lion. And among birds, I am Garuda, the feathered carrier of Vishnu. Of purifiers, I am the wind. Of the wielders of weapons, I am Rama. Of fishes, I am the shark. And of flowing rivers, I am the Ganges. Of all creations, I am the beginning and the end, and also the middle, O Arjuna. Of all sciences, I am the spiritual science of the self. And among logicians, I am the conclusive truth. Of letters, I am the letter A, and among compounds, I am the dual word. I am also inexhaustible time, and of creators, I am Brahma, whose manifold faces turn everywhere. I am all-devouring death, and I am the generator of all things yet to be. Among women, I am fame, fortune, speech, memory, intelligence, faithfulness, and patience. Of hymns, I am the Brihat Sama, sung to Lord Indra, and of poetry, I am the Gayatri verse, sung daily by Brahmanas. Of months, I am November and December, and of seasons, I am flower-bearing spring. I am also the gambling of cheats, and of the splendid, I am splendor. I am victory, I am adventure, and I am the strength of the strong. Of the descendants of Vrishni, I am Vasudev, and of the Pandavas, I am Arjun. Of the sages, I am Vyas, and among great thinkers, I am Ushana. Among punishments, I am the rod of chastisement, and of those who seek victory, I am morality. Of secret things, I am silence, and of the wise, I am wisdom. Furthermore, O Arjuna, I am the generating seed of all existences. There is no being moving or unmoving that can exist without me. O mighty conqueror of enemies, there is no divine end to my divine manifestations. What I have spoken to you is but a mere indication of my infinite opulences. Know that all beautiful, glorious, and mighty creations spring from but a spark of my splendor. But what need is there, Arjuna, for all of this detailed knowledge? With a single fragment of myself, I pervade and support the entire universe. So what I love about that chapter, one of my favorite chapters in the Gita, and what I love about it is that every time I read it, whatever's stressing me out, because there's so many areas in life where I so badly want beauty. I want my kids to love me, and I want to love my kids. I want to have a great marriage. I want to be a good astrologer. I want to be a good friend. I want to be a good brother and son, you know, and the joy that I want to experience, the happiness that I seek, the beauty that I look for, the romance that I want to experience in life, all the love that I'm seeking, that every day there's so many things that present themselves to me in my mind as saying, well, that's falling short. Well, that's not quite it. It hasn't quite, it's not really in that place. And so like a hamster in a wheel, I just go turning and turning and turning, trying to figure out how to modify and adjust and modulate everything in my life so that it'll all, you know, I'll be back in the garden. And the truth is that the simplest way to get back there is to sit down and to look at what is presenting itself to me in my life. Just sit and watch, sit and observe. And then the most important thing, sit and appreciate. Appreciate does not mean condone. It doesn't mean to judge. It doesn't mean to say, oh, this is so good. And it was bad, but I'm changing my mind. It's a good thing, not a bad thing. That's not what appreciating really means in the yogic sense. It means that I sit down and I just go, God, oh, look, there's God. Oh, look, there's God. How beautiful, how terrible, how confusing. And if I can come back to that space of just honest appreciating of experience itself, suddenly my life feels like I am in the garden. I've never left. It's right here. I don't have that often. Like, it's not like I can just turn the switch and be in that place. But what I've noticed is that, you know, especially when Neptune transits come around, I realize that I'm going nuts trying to get to that beauty, trying to hold it, possess it, grab it. And I'm just trying too hard. I'm literalizing, I'm concretizing the things that I think will bring me that state of bliss and fusion. And what I really need to do is just sit back and appreciate. What I love about that chapter is Krishna's just, there's nothing that escapes in terms of like, well, Krishna's saying, well, tell me, you know, what different kinds of powers and qualities do you have as like God, you know? And Krishna's like, well, everything, you know, nothing excluded, everything, silence and talking, darkness and light, loss and abundance, all of it. And he makes it very clear in that chapter too, that the people who are able to move through the light, who I illuminate from, move through life with some sense of grace, some sense of beauty, some sense of being connected to me, are the people who sit and appreciate with love and devotion my presence in all things. That's a practice. For most of us, that's a practice. Neptune transits over the life of my career are those transits that seem to inspire within people the need for some kind of practice. Maybe it's a creative art, maybe it's a spiritual thing, but the need to have some kind of appreciating capacity so that we can stay more deeply connected to those qualities that we seek, so we can have daily experience of happiness, bliss, beauty, romance, love, etc. So I'd love to hear your stories this week about Venus and Neptune. How are you guys doing? Use the hashtag grabbed. Tell us how the planets are showing up in your life. If you want to share it by email instead, just use the email address grabbed@nightlightastrology.com. And I look forward to breaking down. We'll probably take a little bit of a break from transits. I think tomorrow we're going to look at the misconceptions of the sign of Scorpio. I think we'll see. Then we have some other transits to visit toward the end of the week. So looking forward to seeing how your Venus-Neptune experiences are going though. So please do share your stories and we will talk again soon.